Oh gosh! Welcome to a returning from afar edition of The Work.
I like that.
I'm Ryan Basham. Our engineer, producer, and haysayer is Keith Johnson.
Hey.
The shredder is Carolina Gropa.
Howdy.
And here's your host, Bonnie Gillespie.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back for episode 16 of The Work. We're coming at you on the 18th of April, 2011. And we have no special guest in studio today because we're all special. And we figure we'll just get caught up on a shit ton of news and get some information about Ryan's whereabouts over the past 2 weeks.
Where in the world is Ryan Basham? No?
Mm-mm. Not my generation.
No. Aw.
We also have some tweeted questions, which we will be looking at a little bit later, but let's go into some entertainment industry news.
Well, it's a sad day for daytime television. Hollywood Reporter reports that ABC has canceled All My Children and One Life to Live. They will both end this fall and be replaced with talk show kind of stuff. The Chew, an hour-long food series, which will be hosted by Mario Batali, Clinton Kelly from What Not to Wear, Carla Hall from Top Chef, a nutrition expert named Daphne Oz, and someone else from Iron Chef America. So a whole bunch of hosts on this food show. And then another show called Revolution, which is going to be hosted by American Idol alum Kimberly Locke, among others.
That's interesting.
So isn't that odd? But those two shows are going to replace...
Well, the food one to me sounds like it's trying to be The Doctors or one of those shows. It's like a panel of experts talking about a particular theme.
My take on it is this. I mean, if you look at the hosts of the new shows, I think that you will find that they come from the cable arena of ABC, and they're used to not getting a whole lot of money.
That's true. They're going to spend a lot less on these shows. Hundreds of people will be laid off because of these cancellations.
Mm-hmm. Hundreds of people who have been employed for decades will be laid off, which means they're not just getting starter pay. This goes back to what we talked about last week and how when you've got young people who are hungry and fighting for the gigs working freelance, they'll work cheap and they'll work hard. And, of course, people work hard no matter how long they've been at it because that's part of what you have to do in this industry. But they're more expensive when they've been doing it for decades and they're vested in their unions.
It's a lot harder to do that in a traditional workplace. But in a contract-based workplace, that's easy to do.
Sad but true.
Yeah.
It's just interesting that they're both getting replaced with health type of shows.
Well, what's, the second show?
Because of obesity?
It's called Revolution, which is a health and lifestyle series. Basically, the show will document one woman's five-month weight loss journey every week with a reveal every Friday.
Okay, wait. And so then here's what I don't understand, because I know The Biggest Loser is very popular and all these, shedding for the wedding, stuff like that. People love to watch people go on these weight loss journeys. But having a reveal weekly... with around one person, it's not terribly exciting.
Well, one of the hosts is Tim Gunn, another one is a trailer, Harley Pasternak, and of course, Kimberly Locke. So I imagine there's a whole slew of stuff that they'll do every week. Fashion stuff,
I don't know if it'll be a necessarily
stuff.
Weight loss reveal. It might be like...
Oh, now we redid her hair.
Okay. And she has a son she never told her husband about. It'll be like some random things like that to keep her ready.
Does that happen in Brazil a lot?
Yeah, all the time.
That's salacious.
All the time. That's how I... found out.
You were somebody's son that...
Yeah, I was somebody's son, and they were like, oh my god, you...
They do have good plastic
exactly.
surgeons in Brazil.
They really great.
Wow. Really
great. You should see me when I was a boy.
Maybe I'm looking at you as a boy right now.
Too much information. Moving on.
Oh, goodness. The LA Times reports that YouTube is to require tutorials for copyright offenders. They've toughened their enforcement of copyright laws, requiring violators to attend copyright school and pass a test before they can resume uploading videos to the site.
Now, when you say school, to attend school, we're talking video school, right?
It's like they watch a video and they have to take a quiz.
So it's like online traffic school.
Yes, it's exactly like online traffic
school. So you're gonna violate copyright and be required to watch a video and then take a test.
It's slightly less easy than creating a different login.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Interesting.
They're doing something, but
they're doing the least amount of thing they could do possible.
They're not trying to do the right thing. They're trying to appease the people who could cause trouble.
Right.
Because why not just open a different account?
That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
But
what if you have multiple infractions? Is there like a 12-hour version and an 8-hour version like traffic school?
This is interesting. And then do you get points on your YouTube license?
Oh my god. That'd be awesome.
And you start getting profiled. You get pulled over for
license.
No reason.
I can't
use my
dark.
Mouse. My mouse stopped clicking at 5 p.m.
I'm only allowed to use YouTube for work-related activities.
That's right. I can only watch things that are directly related to my job. Boring.
Oh, gosh. So the rap reports that BET is... getting new competition. Martin Luther King III and others will launch a new broadcast network catering to African Americans called Bounce TV, which will debut in the fall.
I guess that was his dream.
You're striking out today, aren't you?
I will add a rim shot sound effect.
Can we not do that?
Dirty. Don't be dirty.
Yeah, we're trying. We'd like to be syndicated on broadcast at some point, right? Maybe.
But see, then that comes around to a later news item that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
But so, all right. Well, so this is going to be competition for BET, which has been around like 30 something years.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. BET's a long standing network.
Yeah. BET.
Do I have that right? 30 years.
They're knocking on 30.
Okay.
And they've
31 year old.
So they've got BET, BET Centric, and I think and TV One. I don't know if TV One is a BET channel.
And then there's Black Stars. Because the Stars Network has its black version.
Is that, but do they have original programming on there?
I don't know.
I would like to know that.
Okay.
I'd like to know that. Well, it should be interesting. The Hollywood Reporter reports that Canadian broadcasters want Netflix regulated like TV. They say that because this premium broadcast, they're acting like a premium broadcaster and ordering original series such as House of Cards, and so they should be regulated like a network, like anybody else.
Talking like FCC level regulations.
Yes.
On
yeah, this is something they've petitioned the Canadian Radio Television Telecommunications Commission. Thank you, Canadians, for
more
for
C's than we could possibly use.
It's just too much. But yes, it's like their FCC.
And so they're looking at, we want things to be rated a certain way so that this one's appropriate for this age group and that age group. And
yeah, I think so. And I think they don't want Netflix running free and wild without the restrictions that they're forced to deal with. So that's what I would do.
Interesting. Any thoughts on that?
No.
Well, that was riveting. Thanks, man.
And that is the news.
Now, we do have a couple follow-ups from last week. Also, before completely
when I was gone
out of news. But yes, and you do have to tell us where you went and why you left us alone. Two things. One, Keith, you noticed that something with the HuffPo freelancers HuffPo is afoot.
Well, here's what happened. Some of the bloggers that were part of the Huffington Post organization, who mostly worked for free and mostly worked for the goodwill of the Huffington Post, have filed a lawsuit for $105 million. Hmm. What they said was, we the bloggers added value
for sure
to the Huffington Post so that when it was bought by AOL, the value of the Huffington Post was inflated by our efforts, and as a result, we deserve a cut. And they said that value that they added was a third of the value of the Huffington
Post.
That's
a big number.
That's huge.
$105 million out of the $350 million price tag.
You know, this guy, I can't remember his name, but I think if I recall correctly, this is not his first rodeo. I think he's been in the lawsuit game before. So
there are the sue-in types and the non-sue-in types.
Sure. Indeed.
And I imagine what's going on is that this is a publicity stunt by the Huffington Post and America Online, and that they will settle out of court for an undisclosed
They'll definitely settle
amount
out of, court.
Of money. But now realize that these were people who were working for the Huffington Post for free.
Yeah.
But they were adding value. I totally get that.
Well, but they're seeking class actions lawsuit status, so it could be that what the settlement ends up being is not that much to people who end up being beneficiaries.
True. Another follow-up from last week is regarding AB 1319, the Krikorian Act of 2009. And yet another manager has been brought up on charges for his, let's say, alleged activities with actors who wanted to be represented by him, who ended up having to go through coaching and, again, spend thousands of dollars. This is Pat O'Brien. And so he's someone who's been on watch lists for at least 20 years that I know of.
Wow.
Through, again, bizparents.org. I've been keeping a really close watch on him and the kinds of things that he's been up to. Or that the families that are coming forward and alleging he's been up to. Obviously, a lot of that will come out in the wash. He has already made a statement to the LA Times that this is a ridiculous law that is trying to force hardworking, decent managers from being able to make a living in Los Angeles. And that's exactly what AB 1319 is about. Sarcasm tag off. Now, Ryan, where have you been? Why'd you go astray?
I went to this little state called Texas.
It's not a little state.
It's not a little state. Shot a music video that I produced in Austin, which is a great little town. It's really, there are shirts in every gift shop that say "Keep Austin Weird," and it is so weird. But it's weird in the most entertaining, fun way. Almost everybody there is willing to help you, and most of our shots were in public spaces, and people were really cool with being out of the shot and being asked to move or whatever. They were totally fine. I had exactly two people that I dealt with the entire time I was there who were problematic. One of them, we asked this group who was there with their trainer to move out of our shot, and everybody was so cool about it. Like, oh, that's so exciting. What are you shooting? And this one woman who was wearing pink, which I remember distinctly, was like, do you have a permit? And you're not allowed. We were here first. And
oh my God.
Yeah. She was a pain in the ass. And I was like, yes, we do have a permit. Thank you.
Thanks, yoga lady.
And, you know, and almost everybody that I dealt with, like at equipment rental places and the almost everybody with the city were really great. There were only, you know, just a couple of people who were more harm than good to the situation.
So did you eat any queso?
I am not a queso person.
What?
And I still ate queso. I did eat some queso. I ate lots and lots of corn tortillas.
Yeah.
Breakfast tacos are huge there. But I, and a lot of barbecue. There's a great barbecue place called the Salt Lick. And,
it's a great name.
Yeah, it's really phenomenal. And they feed you family style. So you pay for like a flat rate and they bring you as much brisket and ribs and beans and coleslaw and cornbread as you want.
Whoa, let's eat.
It was great. And that's they don't intense. Care if you order extra and put it in your to-go box. Can you believe that? Can you believe
that? I like Austin.
Yeah, it's really great. It's really great. I think one of the lessons I'll take away from it, though, is when you're shooting in a city you've never shot in before, really be prepared that you're going to run into people who do things a different way. You get accustomed to shooting in one place. Yeah. You're used to the law of the land there. And I had a little trouble with somebody with the city concerning our insurance coverage in there. Incomplete list of requirements for our insurance. And they gave me a lot of trouble. And it wasn't until the day of beginning principal photography that we finally got our insurance to meet their standards and get our permit approved for one of their public spaces. So that cost us more than we expected to spend because they weren't really upfront about what we needed. But we had a contingency in the budget to cover it. Other than that, it went really, really well. And I got a wicked sunburn. My ears are still peeling. It's pretty gross.
Ew.
It's kind of disgusting.
No, that's not good.
Mm-mm. No, it was great though.
What would you miss about LA?
The weather. Well, our first day of location scouting, and it was 40 degrees and windy. And then 2 hours later, it was 75 degrees.
Yeah.
It was intense.
That's layering.
One of the things they say about weather in Austin is if you want it to change, just wait a minute.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing that I miss is how dry and how there are relatively few allergens in the air. On the weather in Austin, they report allergens as part of the weather. They do ragweed and two other things they report every day on the weather.
So it's like our SIG alert.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing I miss, too, is that, you know, you take for granted that people in LA are used to seeing productions being shot, and so they're not staring in your camera and stuff like that. So we had to there were a lot of shots we had to do over several times, by the end of the first day, we were yelling at people to don't look in the camera. And of course, when you do that, the homeless people nearby think it's going to be funny to run into your shot and start looking in the camera and dancing around and stuff. So that happened. But
wow.
Yeah, that's what we get for shooting in public spaces. Having said that, though, there are lots of qualified production people in Austin. Almost everybody that I met had worked on Friday Night Lights. They were very professional, very easy to work with. They are unionized there, which doesn't mean much in Texas, but they have a union nonetheless. And it was really a joy. So overall, I mean, I would go back and shoot in Austin again.
Very cool. Great. Well, glad to have you back.
Thanks. I missed you guys.
Well, so we went to the Twitter and asked for some questions, and we got several from, I'm going to say the ID is Love Shack, and it turns out that Love Shack is Lauren Shacker.
Hey, Lauren Shacker.
She's a new fan, and I'm crazy about her already because she has lots of fun things to say. So she's in New York, and she's got a question for us, and it's about typing, and of course she understands that typing is key, but when you're meeting lots of Los Angeles casting directors, is it better to look commercial/pretty, or stay true to your type if your type, for example, is more rough? And this is signed off Lauren from NYC.
Yay.
And thanks, Lauren. Here's the thing. You, at some point, are always going to be seen on brand in your type as you are, because that's just how you walk around. That is the way you live your life. It's, as Keith likes to say, what you make look effortless. If you are a type that would book commercials, part of that type also needs to be clean and commercial-ish because of the product and its need to have you be a commercial pitch person for it. It's going to be the cleaner version of you. It's going to be the buttoned up version of you for most products, the more conservative, the more middle America version of you. If your primary type, however, is so rough that you really aren't going to be able to clean that up to be in a commercial, you shouldn't really worry about it, and maybe not focus on looking to book or connect with people who are going to book you in commercial things.
I think that advice is especially true for women, because women are notoriously the heroes of every commercial. Men, not so much. You know.
Explain what a hero is in a commercial for people who don't know.
Well, the hero is the focus of the commercial, the person who does things right, the one who supports the product.
The one who solves the problem using with the product. Right.
And for the most part, women are heroes, and men, specifically their significant others, are
the doofus jackasses who cause the problem that the product has to fix.
Yeah, let's go with that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I just know Keith goes out on a ton of auditions for being that doofus dad who, like, goes to measure something and then decides, I don't need to measure it. I think I'll just throw my hammer through this sheetrock. What could go wrong?
I go out for the guy who says, my plan couldn't possibly fail.
Yeah.
And then I wonder why that is.
No kidding.
True to life.
And if we were in a commercial, I would be the hero wife who comes in and fixes everything every time.
I suddenly have no comment.
Oh, shocking. So, yeah, but I agree with that. I think as a female, if you are a more commercial type, if you are the type who would be hero mom, hero big sis, hero wife, whatever your role would be, yeah, you're going to need to be a little cleaner and conservative in the commercial realm and hanging out with people who would see you that way. Even if you would, in your true primary type, your indie film type, end up booking a lot of victims or blue-collar, road-hard, put-up-wet types. Does that sound right?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Road hard and put-up-wet, huh?
I think that sounds good.
You know the type. Melissa Leo.
Yes.
But she would clean up differently for commercial.
She would, but if Melissa Leo were cast in a commercial, she would still probably be the trailer trash.
But she'd be blue-collar accessible. She would absolutely be selling a product that's like Home Depot type things, mm-hmm. and she would probably not be the hero mom who would walk in needing a problem solved by Home Depot. She would probably be the person who works at Home Depot in the flannel shirt with the apron on, you know?
Like, wouldn't you say, too, though, if the commercial is more narrative in nature and they need a character straight up as opposed to their pitch person, the person who books that, it's not going to differ so much from how they would go out for a real, legitimately theatrical audition anyway.
It's just cleaner.
That's probably the way I'm feeling, too. And I think that the short answer to Love Shack's question is this. It is much more important for you to know what your brand is, and every day, every moment of that day, dress, appear, and put yourself out as that brand.
Looking at Love Shack's Twitter handle, it reminds me of a friend of the work who used to tweet as Sally Stardust. And of course, that's Mandy Moss. She was tweeting with agents and managers and connecting with casting people and really enjoying her time on Twitter. And then one invited her in for a general and said, great, can't wait to meet you, Sally. And it was at that moment that she realized, wow, I need a Twitter handle that is my name, if I can still get it. Because if I'm connecting with people who are my potential buyers, it's not benefiting me to have them create their brand awareness of me under some other name.
Right.
And so now she tweets as Mandy Moss, and I'm just totally putting her business all out here on the podcast. And so Love Shack, Lauren, who I hope will update her Twitter handle so that it is more on brand for her name.
She wants to work in the Valley.
Ooh, yeah, that's something she needs to, you need to...
For those of you non-locals,
yeah,
that means pornography.
Van Nuys is the home of pornography, yes. Love Shack, Lauren, also has another question, and it is this one. When you're heading from New York to Los Angeles, how big a deal are credits on shows like Law and Order? You know, if you're SAG and obviously working a lot, do you need to have credits that are recognizable from your market? What you have to say about that, Carolina?
I say yes.
You think?
I think it depends on the person and the actor and what level you're at and why you're moving here in the first place. Like, have you given the theater thing a try and maybe it wasn't your cup of tea? You know, but I don't know, because I never have given New York a shot personally. But if there's less competition there to get into the film and TV world, and the only real thing they shoot there, well, they used to be soap operas, is now Law and Order, then your odds of getting in that show, I would think, are much greater. So to come from New York, having at least been on that show once, seems like it would benefit you versus an agent going, oh, so you were in New York for 10 years and you never were able to go in.
What'd you get done while you were there?
Like, what did you do? Oh, you did a lot of theater. Oh, that's great. That was your focus. And now you're coming into film. But if you were there focusing on film, the little there is, then what do you have to show for it? So that's my thing, is like, what has she been focusing on? I think it's a very specific question to an actor.
So one of the things that she said in her tweet is, you know, if you're SAG and you're obviously working and you can see from the resume that there is work going on, I think the question comes down to, is there tape? Because we can see that there is work that you've done in film and television, even if it's not the granddaddy of the shows that is shooting in that market, I think that's
helpful. I think it boils down to, like, regardless of what market you're coming from, New York or anywhere else, if you're going to come here, and this is something you talk about, don't come here with the intent to get an agent. Have a reel ready, have work to show for that you've done, whether it's Law and Order or not, regardless. Maybe you've done great work at NYU and you have that, and that's all you need, you know?
I think that applies also to people who live in Atlanta, or Canadians especially. Right. Mm-hmm. If you are a Canadian actor, well, you know, anything else in the TV field, really. If you are a TV director and and you live in New York or Canada or something, you really ought to have racked up a resume there if you can before getting to the Super Bowl.
Well, it's like Australians need to have done Home and Away. Like, it just, there are certain things that if you can accomplish those goals, it is going to immediately translate here because we're able to look at that and go, oh, I know what level of work you can do because I know that show.
It is a lot harder to get up the first couple rungs of the ladder in LA than it is in a minor market where the competition is less.
But you know what? Your first co-star, network television, is the hardest credit you'll get no matter what market you're in. So if it is easier to get in a minor market or even a large minor market, or we call a major market even though it's much smaller than Los Angeles, New York, you should do it.
Totally.
But having said that, there are going to be people who just aren't right for any of the shows shooting in New York.
Exactly. And so let's go back to the typing thing. If your type, if your primary type isn't the type that is regularly cast on a show like Law & Order, it doesn't matter whether you have that credit on your resume or not, because if you're not built to be in that universe, getting that one-liner that has you totally off-brand and totally out of type doesn't inform us about how to cast you, because you're not going to be able to use that shit on your reel anyway.
Right, and here's what I think about this. If you are a month away from working on Law & Order, yes. But if you need to work up to work on Law & Order and it's going to be a year or 2 years, the thing that I know about Los Angeles is it doesn't matter what you have anywhere else on the planet. As soon as you come to Los Angeles, you basically start over. So my observation is if it's going to take you a year or more to get on Law & Order, I would call that year a waste of time, because when we look at your resume and we see Law & Order, that means, okay, we know you know how to work on a New York set. Welcome to LA. Now what do you do?
And there's something to be said for where you spend your time. When you watch, say, a documentary about the life of a president, that president's friends and colleagues are being interviewed, a lot of the time you hear them say, I met them in the political club in college, or I worked in a field office with them at a congressman's office years ago. The point is, the people that you meet now are going to go on with their lives, and many of them will advance in their careers 10, 20, 30 years from now. And would you rather be building the relationships, building those relationships with people who will rise up in the New York entertainment community, or the people who will be rising up in LA? Because if your goal is to be in film and television, you don't necessarily get as much out of the relationships with people who are now producing shows on Broadway.
Well, the statement I make when I see this question, and I see it a lot, the question, should I live in LA or back home or in another market that it's a minor market closer to where I grew up, or New York or whatever, and everybody's trying to, age old question, where do I want to live? Where do I want to live? My answer is always, go live where you want to live because you're happy living there. Because no matter what, you're going to work more in a place that you're happier living than by choosing a place that you're miserable just because there's more work there. It's not going to help you. So if your goal is ultimately to be in Los Angeles anyway, move.
True
get to
story.
LA. Come on out. If this is where you're going to want to be because the weather's great and you're sick of those New York winters and you want to get on shows that are out here anyway, get on out here.
Yeah.
Because I agree, the relationships that you're creating there, although some of them will translate because people are bi-coastal, it's not the shortest distance between you and the money. And you know I'm all about helping creatives find the shortest
distance between
themselves and
Give
the money.
Some money.
Right.
Can I add to that, though? My experience has been, and I know a lot of people who come to LA prepared to not like it.
Oh, sure.
And bitter about coming, and they get jaded really quickly. And I have to say that I know two distinct groups of people. People who hate being in LA and people who love it. And the people who love it, I think, come being open and willing to really experience it and try it. And there are so many people who are in LA and if they had a different career might not choose to live here, but they found a community of people who are in the same boat they are. Orphans from another part of the country, another part of the world.
Well, let me give a thought on that. It's cool to hate LA. There's a certain group of people who absolutely thrive on hating LA, because I think what they're telling people with that is this place is gorgeous, the weather is always amazing, the people are friendly, there's so much great food and nightlife and lifestyle here, and I can still bitch about it. That's how cool I am.
Well, they need therapy. That's a whole
other
set of
right. Because it's like, I see being miserable in a place where it snows 9 months out of the year and you can't leave your house except in like 20 layers of things. Like, I get being miserable there and where there's so little sunlight certain parts of the year that you just you get that seasonal affective disorder or whatever.
Yeah.
Like you hear, oh my God, this is paradise.
It is. If the worst thing you have to complain about is traffic, lucky you. You know,
right?
That's a
first world
problem.
Yeah.
Yes,
it is.
I mean, if you can't find some way to make the best of your time in your car, you are not creative enough.
Oh, come on. There's so much cool shit you
like
can do
listening
in your car.
To this podcast.
There you go.
For instance, just
and
saying.
The thing that irks me is like most people in our world never really have the balls to go after what they want to do, right? When you talk to people who are in their like later in life, they always talk about the regrets and if they could have gone and painted or whatever. whatever, the scary things. You're already ahead of most people, so to speak, because you're choosing to do something that's very difficult and follow your dreams, and you're going to leave family, leave loved ones, leave all the comforts that you know to come and move to LA. For what? If you're going to get here and just bitch about it and complain about it, then go back.
And it's the thing I love is, you know, New Yorkers are really good about defending their city. If somebody complains about New York, they're like, I'll cut you. Don't you bitch about New York. This is my city. Don't you talk about my lady like that. And in L.A., people just kind of let it roll. And I hear it and I go, stop bitching about L.A. You don't like it here? Go away.
Go away.
The 10 travels east, too.
Yes,
it does.
Just take yourself
all the way
out
to Florida.
Just take yourself on out here. You know?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes,
I got no time for that. I got no time.
Nor do I.
All right. One last tweet. I think, Ryan, you pulled this one up.
So this is I think we're gonna, this is a great question for our new segment called Ask the Shredder.
Ask the Shredder. I love it.
So Carolina, our tweeted question from an anonymous tweeter, someone who has to be anonymous, is
I know who it is.
Why are you called the Shredder?
Well, there's many reasons, Ryan. I'll give you the PG one.
Oh, that's boring. Why are we marked explicit at iTunes?
I know.
If you're going to give us the PG version.
Although, if it's the Shredder and there's an R version, I don't think I want it.
Oh, okay.
So, the Shredder came to be because I have, for a very long time, since I was a young child, found therapy in, like, cutting paper and just that whole thing. I don't
know why.
That's healthy. Well, at least it's paper and not people, so. So, I've always liked it. And so, I have always been fascinated by shredding machines, and when I started interning with Bonnie, one of the things that she had was a shredding machine, and I got very excited, as I tend to do around those machines, which is, you know, completely illogical, but it's like therapy for me, just seeing, like, the paper get shredded, and it goes away, and it's never going to be put together again, you know, or if it's recycled, it will, but it's just, you'll never get that back. I don't know, it's just so therapeutic for some reason, and so I opened a lot of headshots and things like that for Bonnie and some of the crap people send her. And so one of my jobs became to shred all of that. And so in the beginning, I would feel really badly about shredding actor headshots and materials they would spend money. But then you realize, you know what, dude? Nah. And this goes back to my rant from 2 weeks ago. Like, if you're not going to take the time to do your research like Bonnie has been writing about for how many years now?
Yeah.
I can't even. If I don't have the patience for it, why am I gonna say, hey, Bon, take a look at this person who says, dear casting director, you know?
Can I tell you, though, one of Carolina's favorite things is this stack of scripts over here.
Yes.
That is several feet high and several feet across.
And moments from being shredded.
And moments from being shredded.
Are those gonna get shredded?
When we go through it all.
Some. The ones that don't have printing on the other side will probably get printed on first, and she's very upset about that.
But, yeah, so yeah. That's a whole nother.
Wow.
But yeah, so that's why, it, you know, and so then it just became this thing where my nickname became the Shredder, which applies to many elements of my life.
Well, let's clarify. All of Bonnie's interns earn a nickname.
Name.
Because if I'm going to tweet or Facebook about them, you know, it's nobody's business who my intern is unless y'all want to out yourselves, and so I just...
Well, I had no choice. You outed me, so.
I don't think I did. I think you did. Because I said, I'm so excited, new intern starting up today, what will her nickname be? Because we haven't decided yet, and you immediately replied to that tweet and said, new intern, huh? Sounds like a bitch. And all
but
I
that's
did,
what I said. I didn't say it
and,
was me.
And I didn't say it was you.
Well, then. Mm-hmm. So.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We'll see. We can go back to the Twitter. And I think we're almost done. Ryan's got a little not really news for
us. Oh, we got some not really news for sure. The Los Angeles Times reports that CBS chief Leslie Moonves received nearly $58 million in compensation in 2010, which is up from $43.2 million last year. Why is the LA Times writing about how much Leslie Moonves is making? Is it news?
It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. It's a little demystifying, I think, to look at somebody like Leslie Moonves and go, okay, well, now I know what he makes. It's not like... He's not one of those mysterious multimillionaires. We know exactly how much he's made this year. But still, why is that newsworthy?
Plus, $58 million is not impressive at all. So
really? You couldn't do anything with that?
Nope. Couldn't do anything with it. Not all my dreams and ambitions of, like,
I think that the reason they talk about it has everything to do with the fact that the LA Times is a liberal rag. And one of the key sicknesses in America is the disparity between what the upper level CEOs get paid and what the...
That's true.
And what the grunts get paid.
Isn't it sickening? It is sickening to know that he made $58 million last year. And the year before that,
well,
he made $43.2 million.
$58 million in compensation just for that company. How much did his investments go up that year? How much money did he really make?
Well, and how much are they putting in on pension and health for him and all the...
Well, the article retirement. Breaks down a little bit how it comes out. We got $900,000 to his pension and $3 million in other compensation, $23 million in stock and option awards. At the same time, it wasn't that long ago that the writer's strike happened, and CBS furloughed and laid off a lot of people during and after the writer's strike.
And during that time, he wasn't allowed to take the private jet.
Well, that must have been awful.
Horrible, right?
Horrible.
Yeah, I hate flying
first class. That's just the worst.
That
I hate it.
That sucks, you know, man.
Slum it in first class.
Yeah, and had to take a talent car rather than the stretch.
A jerk.
Life isn't fair.
Dude.
So unfair.
Really? Not really news.
Not really news. And also not really news, and this is especially for our host, Bonnie Gillespie.
Ooh, what?
The Hollywood Reporter reports that the original 90210 Beach House is up for sale.
Yay!
The Blue Beach House where Ginny Garth and Tori Spelling filmed Beverly Hills 90210 is on the market. This is also where Tori Spelling's character, Donna Martin, lost her virginity.
Ew, now see, I value it less.
Oh, Hermosa Beach, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, if I had a dollar from every person who sent me that story, I actually might be able to afford
the down payment
of the beach house. Because, you know, it is very well known that I am a huge 90210 junkie and cannot be beaten on 90210 trivia.
Well, fun fact, the house is actually 20 miles away from the real Beverly Hills zip code, so it's not even close. Close to 90210.
Well, you do know that the Beverly Hills Beach Club is within walking distance of our studios here in Santa Monica, and it's not in Beverly Hills either.
Yay, TV magic!
Isn't that cool?
Middle America will be shocked.
I know. Sorry, kids.
Who are the 90210 walking tour?
I actually used to do a 90210 driving tour of LA whenever my best friends would come into town, and we would just put the top down on the convertible and drive around. And so, like, there's Now Wear This, and there's the Peach Pit, and then, of course, everything they were shooting on a soundstage in Van Nuys. On that happy note, I think we are wrapped.
Yeah, this has been a wonderful homecoming edition of The Work.
I'm so
glad to be back.
I'm glad you're back.
I'm Ryan Basham. Our engineer, producer, and hey sayer is Keith Johnson.
Hey.
The Shredder is Carolina Gropa.
That's my new thing.
And of course, your host, Bonnie Gillespie.
Thanks again, everybody. Of course, you can always reach out to us on iTunes by rating, subscribing, and reviewing. We love it when you do that. And at podcastingthework.com. Twitter.com/the_work. And that's about it. Because really, after that, you're just a stalker. Till next time, keep creating.